It is March 20th, 2023, 1732 hours, Ward Green here. Our article for today, I'd like to skip over paragraphs 4, 5, and 4, 6 because there's nothing particularly chronologically important there, even though it's very, well, it is chronologically significant, but not very exact, and therefore it's not, even though it's very interesting, it's just not crucial. And plus, this is the 20th, and we'd have to do 4, 5, and 4, 6 before we could get the numbers to combine to something like the number 20, which is today's date. 4, 7, however, adds up to 11, which also adds up to the number 2 if we add the two ones together. So I take that as meaning that Jehovah wants us to do this chapter here, especially because it has information that's, we've discussed it earlier. I mentioned this paragraph earlier, but it also has the more particular information that we need in order to make our chronology more exact or prove our chronology as being true. But the other thing I forgot to mention yesterday, or I told you yesterday, little children, I didn't know the answer to what we'd been studying. I couldn't remember what we'd been looking at in the article Joseph and On, which is this article, I believe, here. Of course, this article that we looked at, when we studied Joseph and On a day or so, a few days ago, we looked at this article because we were discussing the slavery. That's what it was, in Egypt. And so that's where we got the knowledge of the beginning of the Jubilee cycle in 1420, roughly, 400 years roughly after, very close to being exact, perhaps, but after the year that Levi died in Egypt in 1820 BCE, the Jubilee cycle began in 1420 or 1421 or 1422, perhaps, BCE. It looks like this is a very good correspondence to the time period that was given to Abraham that his seed would suffer for 400 years or that they would be afflicted in a land not theirs. So once they began their Jubilee cycle in 1420, the promised land became their own at that point for the first time, and that was the beginning of their owning that land and the end of those years of affliction, 400 years. So that's what I was trying to recall yesterday or the day before when I mentioned that I couldn't remember what we'd been talking about in Joseph and On. That article, or Joseph and On, perhaps it's pronounced On. It's a city in Egypt called On. And it was a city that was important because the priest of On lived there. And it was mentioned with regard to Joseph being in Egypt, official dealings with Egypt. So it's evidently an important city. But anyway, we're not talking about that city today. Today it says in paragraph 4 and 7. I mean, we just can't cover it all. I want to talk about all of it, but it would just confuse people, I'm sure, if I just... And it would confuse me as well, probably. I would make many more mistakes if I strayed too far from the commentary that I've already written. But I was just reading some of the comments or paragraphs, in the article The Crucible, which is in paragraph 10.8. It mentions that the Book of Jubilees told of Cainan finding symbols inscribed in the rock from before the flood. Oh, so this is the Cainan. Oh, this is the Cainan who lived after the deluge. That's what it's meant. That's who it was. Okay, so I stand corrected there. It's the Kayanin who lived after the deluge who found the symbols inscribed in the rock. But the inventor of writing, I also read in the same article, in the same crucible article, same section, it was right here. In fact, perhaps, yeah, the same chapter. Chapter 10, paragraph 9, I mentioned that Enoch was the first among men, it says in the Book of Jubilees, and this other mention of Kainan finding writing in the rock was also in the Book of Jubilees. But this writing about Enoch is in the Book of Jubilees, and it says that Enoch was the first among men who learnt writing. So that's Enoch, who was an ancestor of Noah. He was just some generations, not too many generations prior to Noah. We can't cover everything every single day. It's impossible. There's so much to know. But Enoch, we know, wasn't Enoch the father of Lamech? And then Lamech? No. Enoch was the father of Methuselah. I think Enoch was the father of Methuselah, I believe. So if we go to Genesis chapter 5, this is where we find these things. Even though the generation lengths are wrong in the Masoretic text, we still find that Enoch was the father of Methuselah. And then Methuselah was the father of Lamech. And Lamech was the father of Noah. So that makes Enoch, we could figure it out, but the third great-grandfather? No, the second great-grandfather. Lamech's the father of Noah. Lamech's the father of Noah. Methuselah, the grandfather. And Enoch, the great-grandfather of Noah. So Enoch's the great-grandfather of Noah. But you see how long we could study this and just continue to get sidetracked on these very interesting sidetracks of who was related to whom and what was the exact relation. And it's just endless how all the things we could study. But let's stick to our study here. In Wild Road, paragraph 4-7, it says, from Mr. Bitek's excavations report on Tal el-Daba, the stratum labeled as H that he dates as 120 years later than the calibration by the radiocarbon of Bronk Ramsey from 2010 is at its earlier point about 1920 BCE. That stratum that he dates as 120 years later has an earlier point about 1920 BCE. And this is the period 1923 BCE, specifically from then on, with Joseph ruling Egypt as the vizier, or the second in command over Egypt. Now, since the dating of the 12th dynasty, Egypt is based on the anchor point of a Sothic rising, that's the rising of the star Sothis, and that rising was of the month of four Parat, day 16, year 7 of Pharaoh Senusret III, which is early 19th century. Some people date that 1878 as year 1. So 1872 would be year 7. Some people date that Sothic rising, therefore 1872 BCE. But that marks a beginning point of about 1991, continuing this reading of this paragraph, 1991 BCE, therefore, the beginning point for 12th dynasty Egypt. We see that the time of Joseph of the Bible, who ruled as second in authority over all Egypt in 1923 from our own work, is apparently confirmed as 12th dynasty. So that's a tremendously remarkable and important discovery that we can corroborate the date by an independent method, such as the dating done by, well, either Bronk Ramsey or Mr. Bitek. They're only 120 years different. But Mr. Bitek, his dating is more specifically congruent and in remarkable agreement with our own dating for the time of the time of Joseph, of course. But wait a minute. But it's got to do with, it proves that there were, yeah, this is incredible. There's almost too much to discuss here because it's too, I mean, we have to be careful too what we say. Because we believe that the 12th dynasty was after 1991 BCE, based on the rising of the star Sothis in sometime in 1872 or something BCE, roughly, somewhere in that time period. That's the rising of Sothis that we... Now, many people date that rising of Sothis exactly in that year, but we can't be certain 100% of anything being exact, so we'll just say it's close. But that dating, it's close enough that we could say, let's just say it's exact. And if it's exact, then the dynasty began in 1991. Okay, and that, or very close to 1991, because again, it's never quite exact. But if that's true, then that would indicate that that we're in 12th dynasty Egypt. When we talk about 1923, it must be 12th dynasty. So when we date Joseph as 1923, it must be 12th dynasty, based on this work of Mr. Bitek at Tel Adaba. And Tel Adaba, as we know, is the city of avarice, and the word avarice comes, we talk about this in other parts of the articles, other articles, which are also by me, yours truly, but talking about the origin of the word avarice, V is the same as the letter B in translation between different languages. In other words, when Abba is the same as Ava, or, you know, Av and Ab are the same. But avarice is like aberus or eberus, because the vowels are not so important in ancient languages as the consonants. So it's avarice is named after Eber. Eber being an ancestor of the Jews who was born after the deluge, you know, and he was Shem. We'd have to look at that again, right? But Eber is somebody, we have to look at it just to get it's in chapter 11. Shem became father to Arpakshad. Arpakshad became father to Cainan, right? And we've already learned that Cainan was wrongly omitted here from the Bible text. But Cainan became father to Shelah. Shelah became father to Eber. It's Eber we're talking about here in verse 15 of Genesis 11. So this Eber is the origin of the word avarice, the B and the R, or the V and the R. Eber and avarice. So naming it avarice would be appropriate if it was inhabited by Israelites or by Semites, people who were descendants of Shem. So it's appropriate, you know, that this city of Tel Adaba would have had evidence dating back to the 12th dynasty, because the 12th dynasty is the same time period in which we date Joseph, and also, which is incredibly important, because it gives a context for the time period. It gives a real context for the Israelites being in Egypt at the time that the Bible says they were, which is when Joseph was 30 years old. He was the first one to be residing in Egypt at that time, 1923. But it's a real context we have now for the date that we've got. And it's based on the rising of Sothis, too, which gives us the context of 12th dynasty Egypt and makes that chronologically, astronomically accurate, you know, chronologically, according to astronomy and the rising of the star, Sothis. Very important information. Now, you know, what evidence do we have that Joseph lived in the 12th dynasty? We don't want to get ahead of ourselves. What evidence do we have for that? Well, we know the date. That's the evidence. We know the date when Joseph lived, based on the evidence that we've got from the Bible. You see, we've already got the information from the Bible that enabled us to get that date, 1923. And that is according to the scientific information about the rising of Sothis and the archaeological evidence from Tel Aldaba. It's 12th dynasty, which existed in the city of Avaris or Tel Aldaba. It is 12th dynasty, which is the right time period. And it is in the city of Tel Aldaba, which is a city named after the Jewish ancestor, or the Israelite ancestor called Eber, that is. It's incredible. All these things coincide. We see now that now I can finally continue reading. There's so many things to talk about there that I can't even continue reading until we've finished discussing some of the major points. We still haven't covered it all. We see that the time of Joseph of the Bible, who ruled a second in authority, okay, we've already said that, is apparently confirmed as 12th dynasty. That's incredibly important. Why is it important? Well, because we have a city which was inhabited by Semites, you know, people who were like the Israelites in the way they lived, and they were inhabiting the Nile Delta at the time of the 12th dynasty, according to the excavations of Mr. Bitek. That's proof, therefore, that it could have been Joseph living there at that time. It's a corroboration. It's substantially important proof. And that seems to prove, it apparently confirms that Joseph's time was 12th dynasty. The Turin king list now, which is one of the king lists for the Egyptian dynasties, it gives 213 years for the era of this dynasty's duration. That's just a number, 213. How accurate, we don't know. Whereas Manetho offers the sum number of 160 from Africanus, or 245 from Eusebius in terms of the years, compared to 213. So it's 213 is somewhere in between 160 and 245. So apparently it is somewhere around 200 years for this dynasty from 1991, 200 years after that, which would include the time period of Joseph, 1923. So that's important too. The probability of this having occurred by mere chance, I mean, it's just so, it reaches so deeply into my inner feelings when I consider these things. They're so important as to document the Bible history, you know, that, and also our own spiritual, but possibly also our own genetic history, that it's just, it moves me deeply, and it's very difficult sometimes to remain calm, you know, or to be unmoved is very difficult. It's very moving. The probability of this having occurred by mere chance is admittedly very tiny, vindicating Bible chronology. That's so very crucially important, because nobody else has apparently ever vindicated biblical chronology in this way. No one. This is unique. Apart from the 480 years to Solomon, which is 1 Kings 6 and 1, talking about the founding of the temple being 480 years after the Israelites departed, well, let's, before I even say it, before I say something wrong, let's just look it up. 1 Kings 6 and 1. The 480th year after the sons of Israel came out from the land of Egypt in the fourth year, after Solomon became king. So the fourth year of Solomon was the same as the 480th year after the sons of Israel came out from the land of Egypt, according to that. And that is 1493 was when they came out from Egypt. That's the Exodus date. in the genealogy, and that's the date we use, and that's then from 1493 we'd go 480 years after that, or 479 years after that. We just want to go to the 480th year, so 479 years, just 1 year less than 480, and we get from 1493 minus 479, we get 1014, which is, I've calculated this hundreds of times, but I'm going to do it again because if I made a mistake at this point, it would all be for nothing, wouldn't it? I have to be right, or it's all wrong. So 1493 minus 479, it's either right or it's not. 1014, 1493 minus 479, yeah, is 1014. There it is. See if I can see it. Yeah, 1493 minus 479 is 1014. Is that what it says? That's what I read when I look at it, but when I put it on the screen here. Yeah. Yeah, there it is, 1014, right. Oh, I've zeroed it. Okay. It's okay. Yeah. Anyway, you can do the calculation. 1493? Minus 479, 1014. So, 1014 is the fourth year of King Solomon, because his year one is 1017 in the genealogy. So, year four is 1014, or 3 years later. So, it adds up. And then, as we were saying, there's 480 years to Solomon. And there's 430, that's from the Exodus, and there's 430 years of Egyptian dwelling before the Exodus, which is from Exodus 12, 40 and 41. This is quite involved. If you want to do all the math, and you've never done it before, and you want to check all the scriptures, it's quite involved. But chapter 12 of Exodus, verse 40 and 41, it says, "The dwelling of the sons of Israel who had dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. And it came about, at the end of the 430 years, it even came about on this very day that all the armies of Jehovah went out of the land of Egypt." So that's the basis for the 430 years. And that is in addition to the 480 years from the Exodus to Solomon, right? So this is how we got back from Solomon. We added the 479 years to get to 1493, and then we added 430 years to 1493, and we get 1923 when we add 430 years to 1493. I guess I have to do that now, too. I've done these calculations many, many times. Okay. 1493 plus 430 is, so here's 1493 plus 430 is 1923. Yeah. 1493 plus 430 is 1923. Okay. A calculation which I had to recheck so many times because of my own incredulity, of course. There is the generation list of Heman, apart from these dates, in David's time. which is 1 Chronicles 6 and 33. 1 Chronicles 6 and 33. There's a generation list. It says, of the sons of the Kohathites, Heman the singer, the son of Joel, the son of Samuel, the son of Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Eliel, the son of Toa, the son of Zuth, the son of Elkanah, the son of Mahath, the son of Amazai, the son of Elkanah, the son of Joel, the son of Azariah, the son of Zephaniah, the son of Tahath, the son of Asir, the son of Abiasaph, the son of Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, the son of Israel, or Jacob, is Jacob, as he's also known. Jacob received the name Israel as his later name or appellation. The nation of Israel was the Jacob, was the nation of the sons of Jacob. It was called Israel. They were the 12 sons of Jacob, and Jacob was known as Israel. So, but it, that generation goes all the way from a man who lived at the time of David in verse 33. He was a singer called Heman, and he was a descendant of Levi according to those generations. And when we count them all up, there are 22 of them. I think I've done that myself many times. I can't do that probably right on camera, but you can do that to verify. There are 22 generations from He-Man back to Jacob, or Israel as he was also known. All of these dates and times have been questioned some way or other. So there are 22 generations back during that time period, right, from the time of David, which was 10, let's say 1020, roughly, the time of David, when he was about, at that time, well, he would be older at that time. But if we said 1020, then that would be about, you know, it would be 900 years to get back to, well, let's say 1040, if we want to make it 880 years to get back, because that divides better into 22. So that would be 880 years would be 40 generations, right? 40 times 22. 4 times 22 is 88. 40 times 22 is 880 years. But from 1040, go back 880 years and we get 1920. If you do the math, that's the time of Joseph again. So to get back, and Joseph was the son of Jacob, right? So to go back, we have to go back one more generation. But Jacob was alive at this time. At the time of course he was. At the time of Joseph ruling Egypt in 1923, because Jacob came into Egypt himself in 1914 BCE, just 9 years later in the genealogy. So we have, if we want to consider the time to be later in the life of Jacob, then we could do it that way. But that, so that's about 40 years per generation. Or if we went back a little further to when Jacob was a little younger, then it would be, of course, more than 880 years, and therefore the number of years per generation would be more than 40. In other words, be slightly more, somewhat more than 40 years per generation. And that's a reasonable number. I mean, that's not a small number. It's not a large number. It's not to be, especially considering that Abraham lived 475 years. His son Isaac lived 180 years. I mean, you know, the patriarchs back in those days lived longer. So the generation times, and Abraham was, of course, 100 years old when he had Isaac, his son. And Isaac was 60 years old when he had Jacob. And Jacob was, well, when he had Joseph, he was sometime in his, he was older than 60, as I recall. Well, he was born in 2044 and 19, was closer to about 90 years old, actually. When 89 years old, perhaps, or is it more 91 years old, maybe, when he had Joseph, Jacob was. But I mean, they could have been older than 40 years old when they had their sons back in those days. And so, I mean, it was not uncommon, apparently, according to the Bible record and what we know about Abraham's family. So as we got later on, of course, we know the generation, the length of a generation became more like about 30 years between generation for each generation, or 27 years for a firstborn son, or something like that, based on studying demographics, or whatever we call that. What do we call that? Reversion. The laws of there's a word for it. Actuaries study these things because they want to know when people die, so they can, you know, in the modern day, nowadays, people study how long people live so they can determine how much they should receive when they buy a life annuity, for example. So these things are studied. It's a mathematical science. But nowadays, people have a firstborn son typically around the age of 27 for a male to have a firstborn son. And that's how old the man is, the father is, when he has a firstborn son, is about 27. But it's been that way for many, many years. Even way back in the time of, let's say, Solomon, for example, we can see from the list of the kings when they had their sons, that's documented in another article talking about how old the different fathers were, the different kings were when they had their sons, and the average is about 27 years. That's been around evidently a very long time, at least as far as Solomon. But in Abraham's day, they lived longer because they were living, of course, much closer to the time of the deluge, and before the deluge, people lived even more, even longer than that. They lived longer, and they had more time before they had their sons. They lived longer before they had their son, their first child. The generation length was longer prior to the deluge than it was after, and then it gradually was reduced until it's reached a constant value, which is closer to what we have today. And that value was reached possibly even around the time of Moses, because Moses talks about the days of a man's life is 70 years in the psalm that Moses wrote, which is Psalm number 90. And if, because of special mightiness, he might live 80 years, according to that psalm. So even back in the time of Moses, perhaps it was already normalized, but we know it wasn't quite the same as perhaps we have today, not in every case, because Moses lived to be 120 years old. And there are people today, of course, who live that long, but it's not quite clear if it was entirely the same in terms of the averages. But Joshua lived 110 years old also, and Moses lived, like I said, 120. So yeah, but from Psalm 90, it looks like it was almost the same as what we have today, except for the fact that certain strong people like Moses and Joshua lived longer. Perhaps they lived longer than, it appears they did live longer than the average, because that psalm was written by Moses, Psalm 90, according to, you know, the record, the Bible record. That's the psalm of Moses, and it mentions the days of years being 70 or 80 years, and yet Moses lived much longer than that. I mean, we need to process all that information and understand it all before we can make any wise remarks about the number of generations between the time of Jacob and the time of David, for example, and how long a generation should be. And then I say here, all of these dates and times have been questioned some way or other by those who lived later than these eras. We all who live later than this question it in order to try to understand it. Based on the established success of our works to date, we observe that a period of four generations, as told to Abraham, remember the four generations? Concerning Israel's Egyptian sojourn is the correct value based on Abraham's age at Isaac's birth? Yeah, we already talked about that, that Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. So that generation was 100 years in the case of Abraham. So four generations would be four times 100, because Abraham had to wait to be 100 years old before he had his first son. So four generations is four times 100. But also that ordinal numbers in biblical Hebrew seem to be implying at times a cardinal meaning instead. So fourth implies fifth sometimes also. Hence, four whole units plus some. Support for this may be taken from the ordinal numbers beyond tenth in Hebrew being displaced by cardinal numbers. So instead of 11th, it would be, you know, it wouldn't be called 11th, it would be called 11th, which is cardinal, whereas ordinal is tenth. You know, first, second, third, those are ordinal. 1, 2, 3 are cardinal. So after tenth, it becomes cardinal numbers. Abraham's age is 100 years at the birth of Isaac, thus the 430 years, Exodus 12:40, that the sons of Israel dwelt in Egypt and in Canaan from 1923 to 1493. Those are 430 years. We just calculated. Joseph became a free Egyptian in 1923, and Jacob's family was brought into Egypt in 1914 in the Blessed Genealogy. And those years from 1923 to 1493, that period of 430 years was four generations, because it can be considered as four generations plus some, right? And therefore it could be also called the fourth generation, using the analogy there of the ordinal numbers in Hebrew sometimes implying cardinal numbers. So fourth can be also considered four. Four generations, 430 years. The fourth generation, it could also be called. It has taken 8 or 9 articles to see this fully. It took 8 or 9 articles to understand this concept. That's a lot of writing that was done prior to getting to this point. But that's why I want to just read that one paragraph today, because it's the most important paragraph to read, and it's definitely enough to do for one day. So let's move to the book of our study for today, Genesis chapter 20. Remaining prayerful in our attitude. Now Abraham moved camp from there to the land of the Negev. Where was he? Let's look at 19. Genesis 19. Well, he was... Right. Oh, okay. This was at the time that Sodom was destroyed by the fire and sulfur. In Genesis 19, Abraham moved camp from where he was, which is in the big trees of Mamre. Remember that in 19... The angels arrived at Sodom, but in Genesis 18, Jehovah appeared to Abraham among the big trees of Mamre. Genesis 18 and 1. So Abraham moved camp from there to the land of the Negev after Sodom was destroyed and Gomorrah was destroyed, and Lot had to flee with his daughters, and they lived in the country that was, you know, nearby, but not too near to Sodom, so that they could be safe. And in the Negev, Abraham took up dwelling between Kadesh and Shur, and residing as an alien at Gerar. And Abraham repeated, okay, we're going to talk about Abraham. So Abraham repeated concerning Sarah, his wife, she is my sister, that Abimelech, the king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Afterward, God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, God said to Abimelech, here you are as good as dead because of the woman whom you have taken, since she is owned by another owner as his wife. However, Abimelech had not gone near her, hence he said, Jehovah, will you kill a nation that is really righteous? Did not he say to me, she is my sister? And she did not, she too say, he is my brother? In the honesty of my heart and with innocency of my hands I have done this. At that the true God said to him in the dream, I too have known that in the honesty of your heart you have done this, and I was also holding you back from sinning against me. That is why I did not allow you to touch her. But now return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will make supplication for you. So keep living. But if you are not returning her, know that you will positively die, you and all who are yours. So Abimelech got up early in the morning and proceeded to call all his servants and to speak of all these things in their ears. And the men got very much afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, What have you done to us? And what sin have I committed against you, in that you have brought upon me and my kingdom a great sin? Deeds that should not have been done, you have done in connection with me. And Abimelech went on to say to Abraham, What did you have in view in that you have done this thing? To this Abraham said, It was because I said to myself, Doubtless there is no fear of God in this place, and they will certainly kill me because of my wife. And besides, she is truly my sister, the daughter of my father, only not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And it came about that when God caused me to wander from the house of my father, then I said to her, This is your loving kindness, which you may exercise toward me. At every place where we shall come, say of me, He is my brother. Following that, Abimelech took sheep and cattle, and men servants and maid servants, and gave them to Abraham, and returned to him Sarah his wife. Further, Abimelech said, Here, my land is available to you. Dwell where it is good in your eyes. And to Sarah he said, Here, I do give 1,000 silver pieces of money to your brother. Here it is for you, a covering of the eyes to all who are with you and before everybody, and you are cleared of reproach. And Abraham began to make supplication to the true God, and God proceeded to heal Abimelech and his wife and his slave girls, and they began bearing children. For Jehovah had tightly shut up every womb of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. So that's the story of Abimelech and what happened when Abraham was residing at Gerar with his wife, who was also his sister, his half-sister. Something similar happened as to what had happened in Egypt when Sarah and Abraham were in Egypt earlier. So, and it's interesting here, it's given explicitly about the money that was given to Sarah, or rather to her brother Abraham, her husband in fact, Abraham. The money was given to Abraham, and we know that silver was very valuable. In fact, at certain times in Egypt, we've learned from other, or we may learn from other parts of the articles that we have available to us that I've written. Those articles mention the fact that silver was, in fact, more valuable than gold in some circumstances in Egypt. For example, in Egypt itself, in the tombs, and when they had silver coffins in some of these rich pharaohs, pharaonic tombs, in the tombs of the pharaohs, it wasn't always true that gold was the most expensive or the most valuable metal. Sometimes, and maybe always, but at least sometimes, silver was more valuable than gold. So perhaps always silver was more valuable than gold. It's not clear. Based on the fact we know that silver was so valuable, it's not clear whether gold was ever considered more valuable than silver. It would depend how rare it was, I suppose. I mean, that would be one possible way of looking at it. If silver was harder to obtain, if they had a lot of silver in Egypt, or not, if they had a lot of gold in Egypt, I should say, then perhaps gold would have been greatly devalued relative to silver. But whatever the reason, it's just different from what, it may not be the same as what we think of silver. That's what we should keep in mind here. 1,000 silver pieces may not be what we think the value is for us compared to gold. We don't really know. It's also possible that gold was much more valuable than silver in the land of Abimelech, too. It's possible that gold was much more valuable. It doesn't say. But we should be aware that it's not always a straightforward thing to draw parallels from what we know about precious metals in our day compared to the ancient times, or more ancient times. So that's the story from Genesis for today. We've covered a lot. I feel like we've covered a lot, but there's so much to cover in the study of chronology with regard to these time periods of Joseph and Abraham, and understanding what we can learn about the correlation of the Egyptian history with the Israelite history. It's a lot to learn, and yet there's not a lot of tangible, concrete, you know, documentation from Egypt or anything like that. We have the Bible. We don't have a lot of tangible evidence from Egypt, so that's why we're looking at, in this chapter that we studied today, we're looking at, well, if we had read paragraphs 4, 5, and 4, 6, we would see that there's information there, other information from Egypt, which we can study with regard to people who are like the Israelites, or Semites who are living in Egypt. They have been studied, but the time period is not precise, and it's not documented very clearly as to when these people lived. Oh, but there's also, that's right, there's the very important canal in the Fayum Basin, which we didn't get to study today in paragraph 4-5. It's very important. We'll have to come back and study it very soon, because that talks about the supply canal. The supply source of water for the Fayum Basin was a canal which was called Joseph's Canal. And there's some unbelievably illuminating stories, at least from the time of, oh, it's very interesting material to study. And it's not in this article, though, but I'm thinking about another article now. Was it in Joseph and On? Maybe it was in Joseph and On. Let me see. Yes. No. Yeah, Zechariah Sitchin, there's one story I want to share. That Joseph was more than 100 years old at the time. This is later in his life. This event took place later in the life of Joseph. And he was asked to convert he was asked to prove himself in this. This is the story that was related by Zechariah Sitchin in the article Joseph and On. Joseph was asked to prove again his abilities by converting the desert into a fertile area, and he did it using feeder canals, and he accomplished this conversion in 1,000 days, which is about 3 years. Remarkable, because that would make him 103 years old, right? And so that bears on the chronology. He was 100 years old when he started, about 103 when he finished. And so he was born in 1953, so therefore 1953 BCE minus 103, if we do that math, that's 1953 minus 100 is 1853, and then minus 3 more years is 1850. So in 1850 BCE, Joseph's canal was complete, according to this story here, because that explains the supply line or the supply canal, which was dug, and part of which was called Joseph's Canal, certainly, according to the other evidence that we have about Joseph's Canal, about the name of the canal being Joseph's Canal. Anyway, that's from some other source. But this independent information here, talking about how old Joseph was when he dug the canal that's called Joseph's Canal, dates it to 1850 in our chronology, 1850 BCE. And that was something that is talked about in great detail in this article, Joseph and On, I believe. That's why it's mentioned here. Here it is, because it's we call this a key year, 1850 BCE, the date of the completion of Egypt's waterway, and actually triple that number. If we multiply it by 3, it's exactly 5550, which is the same year that Adam was created, also in the same chronology, which is called the genealogy. So our chronology has the date of Adam, and it's got this year 1850, and the two numbers, one is three times the other one, and it makes 103 also an important number as far as the life of Joseph goes, that he did this when he was 103 years old. And I discuss more about this in this article about the numbers, how the number 1 and the number 3 are components of that number 103, and how the number 13 and also the number 31, which are other numbers that are composed using the digits 1 and 3, are also important in the life of Joseph. So that's been considered in this fairly early article that was written about the mythology too. Also, the mythology of the Greeks and the Romans in this article, Joseph and On, is considered with regard to how it relates to the Israelites and how the Greek gods can be ascribed to the family members of Joseph and Jacob and his sons. So it's a remark. This is a very, very allegorical sort of article. Considers the allegory of Greek mythology as applying to the Jewish personalities who were dominating, but also living in Egypt. But at the time of Joseph, of course, they were dominating Egypt, because Joseph was the second in command, appointed by Pharaoh to rule. Now, let me just look for something here in this article here. Let's see if I can find it. Yes, here we have the word avrek. It's near the beginning of the article, is it, I think? It's fairly near the beginning of the article, but there's no paragraph numbers. It talks about what they used to call out ahead of Joseph was avrek, which meant make way, but it also means father of Pharaoh, because rek is a word which in many languages means king, and so therefore Pharaoh, and av means in Hebrew father. So father of Pharaoh or make way was the word that they called out ahead of Joseph when he was riding his chariot throughout Egypt as he was performing his important rulership duties. Wait a minute, is that right? Wait a second here. What is... Oh, I see, right. Right, okay. from the deluge in 3282 BCE until Solomon's temple being founded in 1014, the difference between 3282 and 1014 is 2,268 years, if we subtract 3282 minus 1014. There is a period of time equal to 2,268 years. And that number we'll see also is one number that we will see again. We'll be able to use that number, 2268, more than once in the consideration of this chronology of mankind, not just the Israelites, but the chronology of mankind from Adam and on. And Joseph and on is the name of this article that we just looked at right here. But we've been studying the Wild Road article. That's the one that we've been doing as our starting point for studying these things. So that's all for today. It's so meaningful to me to be able to understand the chronology of the human race, right? The human race, we're all part of the human race. We're all brothers because we're all sons of Adam. To be able to study that chronology is so meaningful to me that it's very, very deeply touching to me. In my inward parts. By the way, the memorial this year, I believe, is Tuesday. It's going to be Tuesday, April 4th. The memorial of Christ's death. And that's something to be prepared for or plan for. And it is March 20th, currently, 2023. Is that right? March 20th, 2023? That's right. It's 1829 hours, and this is Ward Green. Thank you for listening and watching. I hope you enjoyed this. Have a wonderful day, all of you little children. Work hard. Work hard and learn how to read is a very, very good thing. If you can do that, to learn how to read would be very important, because then you could read all these articles and understand them much better. So for that purpose, and for reading the Bible, of course, learning to read is so important, and that the Bible is responsible for having helped people all over the world gain literacy, the ability to read. Without the Bible, there would be far more illiteracy in the world than there is today. That's for sure. So the Bible is incomparable in that regard. But because we have the ability to read, when we can read these articles also. And we can benefit from more than just the Bible. And read, we can read scientific articles. We can do research online, and we can research medical journals to understand how vitamins affect the body and so on. We can do many more things if we can read. So that's all for today. Praise Jehovah. Hallelujah, which means praise Jah. And Jesus Christ, our ransom sacrifice, right? He's done so many things. He did so many things. And he has done so many things. But he surrendered his life as a sacrifice for the sin of the original man, Adam, so that we could regain the prospect of living forever. Whether we have a hope of living in heaven or on earth, because Adam hoped, of course, to live on earth. There's an interesting idea about in the Bible it says, there's a scripture about this where it says that, let's look up Men Press. Yes, it says in Matthew 11 and 12, from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of the heavens is the goal toward which men press. So only from the days of John the Baptist was there a heavenly hope of living in heaven. For the people prior to John the Baptist, their hope was to live forever on earth, was to not die, or to live forever on earth. Job had the hope of a resurrection, as we saw when we were reading the book of Job. So, but, you know, but there were other people, many other people besides Job, who, of course, died, but they didn't have the heavenly hope, but they could have had the earthly hope, as Job did. And so, only since the time of John the Baptist has there been a heavenly hope. It's a new idea, it's a new thing that was brought about because of Jesus. So that's another thing that we have, for which we have it's interesting. Well, it was John the Baptist from his time on, right? Yeah, it was from the time of John the Baptist. So, but it was Jesus who initiated this promise that that those who follow Jesus could live in heaven and rule with him in heaven. That was the heavenly hope that came about because of Jesus coming to earth. And it began in the days of John the Baptist, when people had that, began to have this goal. Some people had this desire to go to heaven and live and rule in heaven with Jesus. So when we commemorate the death of Jesus, which is what we do at the memorial, we're commemorating this remarkable promise also of the kingdom of the heavens that was promised to those who would follow Jesus. And we're commemorating the idea of the ransom, which gives everlasting life not just to those who go to heaven, but also to those who live forever on earth. So the memorial is an important event. So without further conversation, it's time to say bye for now. Have a wonderful day. I love you.